This week on the Flophouse, we discuss the two most exciting words in the English language, Dragon Wars. Welcome to the Flophouse tonight. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
I apologize in advance if I sneeze or sniff or just sound miserable tonight. I have allergies of some kind.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Not funny, just true.
Maybe you're allergic to dragons.
I could be allergic to dragons, but why would that strike me right now, Elliot?
Well, it could be because we just watched D-War Dragon Wars, the hit Korean-U.S. co-venture.
Yeah. And when I think of dragons, the first name that pops into my mind is Robert Forster.
Yes. And the second name is Daryl from The Office.
Huh. Well, it's a good thing that both of those actors were in this movie.
The third name is some Korean guy who also likes dragons.
Who wrote and directed the film.
Yeah.
Well, Dragon Wars, that seems like a pretty simple concept. I don't think there would be any trouble setting that and turning into a movie.
This is where you would be wrong. Oh,
really?
The concept of Dragon Wars is surprisingly complex and intricate.
How so?
Well, it all begins with an ancient Korean legend. You see, there's an ancient Korean legend that, what's it called, Nirogi?
Emoji.
I don't know. I told you that you would have to explain this part of the screenplay because I completely zoned out.
The backstory to Dragon Wars is exciting and dull. It's told to us in a triple flashback structure. We see a flashback, which becomes another flashback, which at one point becomes another flashback. But anyway, it turns out 500 years ago, in the year 1507, because the movie was released in 2007, there was a girl born with a dragon birthmark on her shoulder, and for some reason, that dragon birthmark gives her the power to turn one of two dragons, Emugi or Baraka, into actually serpents.
I've fallen asleep already. I have fallen asleep.
She can turn one of these serpents into a dragon, and the power of that dragon is undefined. But apparently, it's pretty powerful because it could, quote, wipe out the entire village, which is not that big a deal. But anyway, in the year 1507, there's an old man. He trains a young guy to be a warrior to protect this girl. An army of, I assume, demons? They seem to be just Cylons or suits of armor or something like that.
Yeah.
What are they called?
I forgot.
Aatrox army?
Yeah, the Aatrox. Yeah, something like that.
It's an army of people and dinosaurs and dragons.
Might as well be orcs. I mean, because yeah, it's all very, very Peter Lord of the Jackson. Rings.
And computer-generated armies. They try to capture this woman. They fail. Flash forward 500 years to 2007. Handsome reporter Chris McCool guy, I don't remember his name, and his sassy black buddy have to save the reincarnation of this girl.
Now, let's make it clear, though. When you say flash forward, you mean that figuratively, because actually the structure of the film is there's the newsman, the television reporter.
Chris McCool guy.
Who discovers there's some sort of like dragon bones or something gets discovered.
Giant scale, and they never really explain why that scale is there.
Yeah, that was weird.
The movie opens at a crime scene where some unknown crime has been committed, and there's a giant dragon scale. Chris McCool guy sees it, and then he remembers as a kid being left alone by his father with Robert Forster, Jack of Jack's Antiques, who tells him in flashback the story of how they are the reincarnations of these Korean heroes.
Yeah.
Who, in a flashback, see the good serpent Emugi.
Robert Forster specifically is, when he's in the past, is basically the sage kung fu master character from Kill Bill Volume 2,
yeah.
I would say. I'd just like to point out, though, that the kid is left alone by with his dad, Robert Forster. The kid's dad is trying to sell Robert Forster, antique shop owner Robert Forster, some ancient dagger.
Whose antique shop is basically a warehouse of what I have to assume are stolen works of art.
There's like a sarcophagus in there. There's a golden Buddha statue. It's a pretty fancy antique shop.
And all that shit later on, like the bad guy, he's kind of like a weird mixture of Terrence Stamp and
Bill Murray and Steve Martin and Darth Vader and Dr. Doom.
Yeah, this was
No, there's another armored
Shredder.
Villain. Shredder.
He tends to get hit by cars a lot.
there's one beautiful scene
where he gets hit by a car. Then there's a fight scene. Like he's okay because he's a bad guy, and they go out and they fight with him for a while, and then he gets hit by another car,
and that knocks him down.
Yeah, well,
this is a movie. Before we get any further, know this, ye audience. This is a movie in which many cars flip over or swerve around things, sometimes for no reason. The dragon at one point, the evil serpent Baraki chases them through a garage of a hospital. They run out onto the street. He comes out and roars at something off screen, and then we just see a van tip end over end across the screen past him, which I guess swerved to miss him off camera.
Yeah.
Great movie.
But
I bet they did a couple of takes for that one.
And the computer-generated van to go across the street?
Yeah.
But that's the backstory.
Sure.
So there's this reincarnated girl, 19 years old. She's about to turn 20, which is the magic age when she gets her dragon power. Chris McCool, his sassy friend, and the FBI.
And Chris McCool, I guess, believes Robert Forster implicitly, even though Robert Forster has faked a heart attack so he can be alone with this young boy. And the first thing he tells him is like, by the way, you're a chosen one, and you're going to fight dragons.
And he gives him a magic amulet.
Yeah.
Well,
which he kept for the many intervening years.
Yep. Those
never losing faith.
He's going to have to fight a weirdly phallic dragon.
So what you're saying is this movie is basically just a creation of his mind. It's a coping mechanism while he's being molested by Robert Forster.
I think that is correct.
I would have to believe that's the alternate ending that was not included on the DVD.
It's a subtext.
The thing is that the entire movie is basically a number of weird scenes of exposition that are linked together by our main characters being chased by dragons around the town.
And then occasionally you'll just have long sequences where it's the army fighting dragons.
Yeah, because like the first fucking 45 minutes of the movie is scenes of the fucking main characters sitting around talking like, man, we got to get away from these fucking dragons. And then a dragon shows up and they run away for a while, and apparently they lose the fucking giant snake dragon.
The giant snake dragon, whose rampage across L.A. gets very little attention the first couple days.
Yeah, couple of days at least.
It's not on the news as far as we can tell.
But this is,
well, because the fucking reporter is too busy running away from the goddamn dragon.
There's one reporter in L.A., so the story's not getting out.
Yeah, but you'd figure that if, you know, several buildings get destroyed by a giant dragon, word would get around.
This
just
is
sort
national
of
news.
Like the internet or something.
If CNN...
Or just, you know, person to person.
If CNN...
Oh, you know what happened the other day? My house got knocked down by a dragon.
Yeah, but...
Holy shit, that's weird.
But after like the seventh or eighth person, it'd be like, hey, did you hear? Like, everybody's turning into dragons and houses are exploding.
That doesn't seem right. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
No, trust me, my friend's hairdresser's uncle said it happened. He saw it.
So,
oh, this world where word about the dragon that's destroying buildings and killing people doesn't get out very quickly.
Sure.
Is also a world where a man is put in a straitjacket, a zookeeper, a kindly fat slob zookeeper we first see falling asleep while eating pizza, witnesses the serpent, the evil serpent, eating some elephants. He reports this to the police, as he should, and he's immediately put in a straitjacket and confined.
Yep. Yeah, like right away. He's not violent. He's just talking about a big snake, but straight jacket. I mean, unless what we didn't see was a cut scene where, you know, it's his dream to be an escape artist, and he was just happening to be practicing.
Or he pulls a knife on the police or something.
Yeah,
sure.
But
or, like, he has a long history of like mental illness. Possibly he was molested as a child or something
by Robert Forster.
I think that should maybe be our second and last reference to molestation in this podcast.
I was going to try and fit like
there may be a surprise third at some point. Look for it, audience.
But let's cut to the chase.
Sure.
Like the movie didn't. Does this film skimp on the dragon warring?
Mm.
I'd have to say no on that account.
There is a lot of dragon warring.
Almost too much.
Yeah, I would go so far as to say too much. I mean, I made the point, you know, there's a long scene of the dragons tearing up. I guess that's Los Angeles that they're fighting in.
You didn't recognize it?
I don't know.
You didn't recognize the two square blocks of L.A. that the entire movie took place in over and over again?
I'm just, I just found it hard to believe that it actually was Los Angeles, knowing that it was a Korean film. Like, I thought that maybe they would be doubling some Korean city for Los Angeles, or they shot it in Toronto or something like that. So, yeah, all right, the dragons are tearing up Los Angeles, and that's pretty exciting because you don't see that every day, dragons taking down Los Angeles. But then the big climactic fight, they're all transported into some sort of eerie nether world that's sort of like
wasteland. Yeah, like Immortal Kombat.
Hellish limbo, and two dragons fight each other, and that's not as exciting.
No, it's not.
No.
Yeah, that's when you would expect to see dragons.
What you're saying is a dragon.
Exactly.
You're saying is with when it comes to Dragon Wars, it's all about context.
Yeah, I like a fish out of water Dragon War.
You know, and that's the thing. Like when you see dragons fighting in a wasteland, frankly, it looked like it was just like some guys were playing a really cool looking video game.
Yeah,
because it looked like a video game, like fighting game level, where you're like, oh, look at the crazy thing in the background. Oh wow, he did that move where he grabbed the other dragon with his mouth.
Yeah.
Was that a spoiler? No, should I not say that about the mouth?
You should have said the mouth move.
You shouldn't have said that there were actually dragon wars in the movie Dragon Wars.
Okay, I apologize.
Going into this, I was worried it would turn out to be a movie where it was about, again, a troubled child who creates dragon wars in his imagination to escape from, say, a shattered home life.
It's sort of a never-ending story.
Never-ending story, sure, yeah. Godzilla's revenge kind of thing, Bridge to Terabithia, you know. But no, it was about fucking dragons running around and helicopters shooting them.
Were those dragons? They just look like giant pterodactyls.
Yeah, like a lot of the things that we were advertised as dragons. I mean,
I have to say, those guys were dragons.
Those the big ones?
Okay.
The ones that could fly.
The ones that were like,
those big, like
the Nazgul.
The big fat ones. The ones that were riding were not so much.
Yeah.
The Bulkos were the flying ones. Those were dragons. But
what about the big fat slug things with the guns on their backs?
I would say those are not dragons.
Yeah, those are... Those are just rejected Mos Eisley background monsters from the retooled Star Wars.
Yeah, they look like Dewbacks. You said that, right?
Yeah, well, I didn't want to admit that I called them Dewbacks.
Yeah, that's cool.
I made a number of Star Wars references during
What's
that.
Really
Elliot, I think any listener to this podcast assumes that you know the full name.
For full disclosure, you should make sure that you two-legged dinosaurs that were being ridden, you repeatedly referred to as Tauntauns.
That's true, but everyone knows what Tauntauns are.
Yeah, I guess
right,
so.
Listeners?
So, nice giggle. So the weird thing is that 500 years later, when this entire army is created out of like dust or ink or
ink.
Some shit,
they were all
ink.
Coming out of scrolls.
Yeah, they all came out of scrolls.
Inspiring tale of the written word and its real
exactly.
power.
So these dinosaurs, dragon things, I don't know, had giant like missile launchers on their back.
Yeah.
And those missile launchers blew up literally every single possible like tank that the United States Army could throw at them. So
their bullets had no effect on any of the soldiers.
500 years ago, they had these same missile launchers. Like, who was inventing this shit? Dragons? Magicians?
There was a magician.
There was one magician with his weird like light like. Saber.
Some sort of lightsaber sword that didn't work for other people.
And shield that blocked bullets.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of those flying around.
They were aiming at the shield.
Yeah, that was...
Well, I think
pretty big.
What it is because these dragons pop up every 500 years, they have to make sure that their technology is far enough ahead to deal with whatever...
I wonder what the dragon does during that time. Is it like Brigadoon? Does he just sleep for 500 years? Or is he hang out in that wasteland? Or
no, I think it's like a time jump. Like for him, it's just
it's just the next day.
Second.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
But then, how long has this been going on? Because we saw the first time we see it happening is in 1507. I have to assume it happened in 1007.
Yeah,
507, 07, and then. Or just seven, I guess.
Well, the original dragon fighter was actually a stegosaurus.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you go back far enough, it's just dinosaurs. Then, you know.
And that's not very exciting. They're fighting
dragons.
That's, why,
that's actually, why that wasn't the movie, dude.
Hey,
I don't know. Dinosaurs
point.
Fighting dragons. I think I would like that as
that
a movie.
That does sound like a movie that I would have written when I was 10.
Especially if they're talking dinosaurs.
Only if there's cowboys riding on their backs firing laser guns.
That'd be so awesome.
Yeah.
And one of them has like a robot that learns how to love.
Yep.
And another has, that reminds me.
And the dinosaurs wear Hawaiian shirts and wear sneakers
now
with the toes
just,
busted out.
Now it's just Denver the Last Dinosaur.
Or
actually
Theodore
now,
Rex, I guess.
Now it's
the
just
one.
The folder that I had when I was in third grade that showed a dinosaur with sunglasses on surfing.
Yeah.
It's a cool dinosaur.
It was so cool.
You may wonder why we're not talking that much about the characters in this movie. And that's because there was nothing memorable about any of them other than that they were all played by character actors that you would recognize from several American movies or television shows. And they're all faces. They're all, you know, people that you would know. But, I mean, clearly this is their version of doing a Japanese commercial, say.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest star in the movie is Robert Forster.
Yeah.
That says something for you.
Well, he knows a thing or two about dealing with giant reptiles, though, so...
That's true.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of the casting. Like, I like it when I watch a movie and the whole time I'm like, oh, hey, that guy, yeah. I didn't know he was frightened of dragons. Like...
It's a new aspect to
it. Yeah, it really... It's not his IMDb bio.
It really, like, it snares me.
I can't wait for that episode of The Office when he's like, by the way, I hate dragons. Wink! Winks to the camera.
It's a little nice.
Check out Dragon Wars on DVD now.
There's a little animated sparkle in his eye.
Speaking of animated, all right, this is off topic. Do you guys watch 30 Rock?
Sure.
In The Office, have you noticed the animated ads for movies in theaters now that run across the bottom of the screen?
Yeah.
That is irritating. And I said this would be the best mode to express my irritation with that. Nice. The middle of a podcast about Dragon Wars.
Thanks, Andy Rooney.
Yeah,
you morph into Andy Rooney a la Robert Forster in this film.
Well, oh, that's the other thing.
Every time, like, they need saving from something, some random stranger comes up and saves them, and then after they leave, the camera will linger on that random stranger for a little bit, and we'll see him morph into Robert Forster, him or her. And you got to wonder why it couldn't have just been Robert Forster showing up.
Yeah, why actually is he just doing this himself?
Yeah, the thing is, guys, what you don't understand is that wasn't special effects. That was Robert Forster acting really well.
Oh, that's
wow, that's amazing.
It was the
that's
skill of his acting.
He really became
resume.
Another character.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So you were talking earlier about the exposition and how it kind of jumps around and how early on you don't know if you're coming or going. I really respect that about a movie that really doesn't, like, underestimate its audience. Like,
it doesn't underestimate is one way to put it. Another way to put it is, as I think I said when I was watching it felt like we started at chapter 4.
Yeah, you know, it's like you jump right in the middle. Like, it's very much like if, like, 5 11-year-olds had to come up with a movie and were still writing it midway through
as
the
they
actual...
Were shooting
yeah,
it.
As
yeah,
they were shooting it.
That's right. That's true. And there is something kind of endearing about
as
that.
As if they decided, you know, I don't want to write a movie about feudal Korea. I want to write a movie about dragons.
Yep.
Well, that's the thing. This was very much, and I know this because I read about it a little bit, not to prepare for this podcast, but just when Dragon Wars was coming out.
You said, holy shit, there was a movie about dragons.
I said, I have to learn more about this. This was a movie that, I guess the studio that made it was Korean with, I guess, American backers. And this was a bid by Korea... By the Korean film industry to kind of get a bigger foothold in the American film goer's mind.
Mission
which is
accomplished.
Which is why it was shot in English, mostly in Los Angeles with American actors. And I guess Old Boy was not blazing the path that they were hoping to make in the American mind. So they took out Dragon Wars, and I don't think it was such a successful mission.
The rest is history, you know.
I do believe
it's... The rest is history.
I do believe it is the highest-grossing Korean film in Korea.
Okay.
But then it was not a successful export.
Well, that's because they love Robert Forster over there. He can make anything in Korea.
They're crazy about that guy.
He becomes amazing.
He's like George Clooney in Korea. Both of the Koreas.
But it was interesting, though, because it's...
Korea unites them, bridges the gap.
The story about South Korea now is that you really read about is that there's this explosion of new film talent, and like there are all these movies coming out of Korea, these kind of harder edge things, and then they're like, no, we can make Dragon Wars too, don't worry.
Sure.
We can make our version of Reign of Fire.
My complaint about this movie, my main complaint is that although there
you're
did...
You're only allowed one.
Yeah, I'm going to hear this one.
Although there did end up being a lot of dragon warring, I thought that the dragon warring was very lopsided. Like, the last 40 minutes was just dragons fighting, and then the rest of it was exposition and people running away. And when I hear the title Dragon Wars, I think, awesome. All right, like, I saw the trailer, I'm like, okay, this movie is entirely about a bunch of dragons wake up in modern-day Los Angeles, and the U.S. has to fight them off. And it's kind of, I mean, like, I guess it's like Godzilla.
You expected strategy... Day 2, we lost some ground to the dragons. We're going to make it up on day 3, though. Oh, they're at my flank. Pincer movement. Sarge! Here's a picture of my girlfriend back home. Oh, she's beautiful. Don't die on me. You got to stay alive for your girlfriend. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well,
and then Ernie Pyle walks away.
Not necessarily
away.
So
really was inspired
old-timey.
By the story of G.I. Dragon Fighter.
Yes.
What are we fighting for, man? Why is America even involved in these dragons? No dragon right. ever called me, and so forth.
And then
was the guy's last name Dragon Fighter?
Yeah, I think so.
And they're like, all right, men, when you're on leave, remember, if you're going to fuck a dragon, wear a dragon condom.
You don't understand. Humans and dragons can live together. Shut up, dragon lover. You know, things like that.
Yeah, loose lips and dragons.
The war. Bring our boys back from the dragon war.
That's, yeah. That sounds really good.
My fellow Americans, you know, so forth.
All right.
A day that will live in dragon feet.
If anybody hears
you're just putting dragons on one the words now.
If anybody hears the sound of a pencil on paper, it's because I'm finishing my screenplay as we speak.
Or just like a disaster movie with dragons.
A dragon curtain has descended across Europe.
Like volcano?
You didn't expect so much mystical Korean nonsense.
Yes.
Is what it comes down to.
And again, I expected more reaction from the populace, because unless a dragon is being shot out right in front of their eyes...
they don't notice it.
Well, people are pretty complacent.
The people in this movie are much like horses, or parrots. If they don't see it, it doesn't exist, you know? Yeah. You kind of feel like if the dragon stood a blanket over all of L.A., everyone would have fallen asleep because they would think it was night. For all the talk about what a terrible movie this is, and it is terrible, I cannot lie to you. I was so excited to see dragons fighting... helicopter gunships and things like that.
Sure.
And, you know, dragons flipping cars over. Like this, and we were talking earlier about how Children of Paradise, the Carney film, is on my TiVo at home, and I'm looking forward to watching it. Yeah. And I'm in the middle of Seduced and Abandoned, the other movie by one of the movies by the guy who made Divorce Italian Style. But
classic cineast films.
Exactly.
Artie.
I was watching Picnic Artie at Fair. Hanging Rock. I think I recommended that a while ago. But I gotta tell you, watching dragons fighting helicopter gunships is the funniest thing in the world.
We've got some extra stuff to deal with. I promised you guys a surprise before the podcast started, but
that's right.
So I want to keep things moving along.
Surprise! Each of you has one day to live.
Yep.
I poisoned the Chinese that you ordered.
Yep. The results of the blood test. You guys are actually brothers.
You guys have
to. Look what we made out last night. Oh my god!
You guys have to keep your adrenaline pumping, or else your heart will explode.
Oh no! We got a Hong Kong cocktail.
Yeah. They gave you the Hong Kong cocktail. The Hong Kong cocktail.
You know,
I know it well.
The famous Hong. You saw the cover story about it in Cosmo, right?
People who don't know what crank is are baffled at this point in the podcast.
I think the people who listen to this will probably have a passing familiarity with crank and the Hong Kong cocktail.
Not to sidetrack this conversation back to Dragon Wars, but if I have one small complaint about this movie is that this movie is literally filled with reaction shots of people like a dragon going by and somebody's eyes going wide, like cars flipping over, et cetera, et cetera. And then, like, dinosaurs attacking people in feudal Korea and their pants falling down, like that sort of thing.
The guy's pants didn't actually fall down.
The dragon grabbed him by his pant ass, though.
Same thing. So, but there isn't a single, reaction, like, nude scene, like a dragon knocking over a wall and a girl's, like, taking a shower, or, like, a dragon runs by really fast and a girl's blouse falls down and it makes, like, a zip sound effect. Like, there's nothing like that.
So you would rather this be Zapped Wars, is what you're saying.
Yes. Frankly,
if that meant that it starred Scott Baio.
I think you have your script, Bikini Dragon Wars.
Yeah, that's the thing, the great Bikini Dragon War. They inherit adventure.
What happens is they inherit a couple of dragons, and the dragons are about to go out of business.
There's only one way we're going to be able to keep these dragons afloat, girls. The big evil developer wants to bring in his own non-sexy dragons.
He's going
to
tear down these dragons.
How come bikinis. Those bikini movies, it's never the government wants to build a highway using eminent domain? Like, and the bikini girls are obviously on the wrong side of this debate. This town needs this highway to get business in. But movies always side with the bikini girls.
Just like in life, dude.
Those girls are roadblocks to progress for that struggling town.
But they're so topless. before we move on, I do want to say one thing that I think was... not addressed when we're talking about the fat zookeeper, which is while he's being, you know...
Because there's so many nuances to that portrayal. Well, there's his being asleep, there's his most half-eaten pizza.
Well, when he's talking to the psychiatrist, there's this one point where she's like, just say that there's no giant snakes and we'll let you go, or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, I realize that there are no giant snakes. I don't want to get thrown in the thing. I'm going to... I'm just going to fake it. And she's like, fine, you can go. And then they do the thing where the dragon comes up in the window behind.
Behind her.
Yeah, and he's like, look, it's right there behind you. And she turns around and it's not there. And it's such a an Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein moment.
Yeah.
And I just, you know.
That joke never gets old, is what
you never does.
To say.
That's what I'm saying.
Timeless.
That's exactly. You didn't misconstrue his message at all.
No. Well, that's a little more of the spirit that I was looking for in Dragon Wars.
Oh, you wanted more of
the wackiness.
So you wanted more of the, like, drunk guy sees a dragon, says, never again, and throws the bottle over his
exactly.
shoulder.
Exactly. Kind of rubs his eyes a couple of times.
Dan, your cat is eating your computer, I think.
Really?
Almost.
Or like
not
it is made
like
of
a
tuna.
Dragon in the movie I saw recently.
Well, let's
Stardust. The dragon in the movie Stardust.
Not like the dragon in the movie I saw recently. New York, New York, starring Robert De Niro and Liza Minnelli.
The dragon was figurative.
Not like the dragon in the movie I saw the other day. Garden of the Fitzy Continis.
Fuck off.
Sorry.
Now you're just making up words.
I must come off as such a pretentious asshole in these podcasts. Cause
I like to think that's
movies.
Your part to play in the jigsaw puzzle that is the Flophouse, though.
I see.
Okay, you promised me a
yeah,
fucking
where's
thing.
The
no, no, let's just put quickly the final judgment on Dragon Wars.
Big promise. Huh?
Is it a movie that you thought you didn't like at all, a movie that you thought was a good bad movie, or a movie that you kind of liked a little bit, so... What do you say, Elliot?
Well, I mean, I believe I've mentioned this. I'm kind of on the halfway point between good, bad movie and movie I liked a lot, as hard as it is for me to admit it, because, I mean, there were many bad movie things about it that I thought were funny. The massive, stupid exposition and things that happen for no reason and the villain getting hit by two cars in a row. But then on the other hand, I can't lie. I genuinely enjoyed watching helicopters fighting dragons.
Yeah, where I'm going to go on this is that I think that ultimately it's a very dull movie, really, for being 90 minutes long, because there is so much exposition and a little too much dragon fighting. However, if you do watch it, I think you will enjoy it if you start an hour in
and finish 20 minutes before the ending.
Exactly. And then you'll just get a solid dragon war. Just like a taste.
Yeah, I think this is one of those movies I could have watched if my DVD player had a shuffle function and just like randomly bounced around. I think that would have been ideal. I'm gonna go with the middle ground as well. Like, I gotta admit, I was disappointed. I don't know what I was quite expecting, and this wasn't quite it, but it wasn't bad enough for me to hate.
All right, well, that's mixed. Well, before I get on to our surprise, I do want to make an announcement that I forgot.
Oh,
fuck.
This is called building suspense. The audience is on the edge of their, you know, their subway seat, if they're like commuters listening to us, or I don't know where else people listen to
their
podcasts.
If they're listening to us to help them fall asleep at night, if they're insomniacs.
Sitting on the edge of the trolley they're riding around on.
Because they're trolley drivers. Anyway, I do want to say before I move on, an announcement I did want to make at the beginning of the podcast. This is our first May podcast. That means May sweeps.
Which applies to podcasts, apparently.
Yeah, it does.
And we're recording this on May Day, so get out there, communists, you know.
I just wanted to let everyone know that we're doing this podcast completely nude for May sweeps. So, put that image
well,
in your brain and smoke
a hat.
It. You are wearing a hat, and Stuart has Argyle socks on.
And an artificial penis strapped on next to my actual penis.
So stay tuned for other May sweep stunts. But I do want to say the big surprise is the return of listener mail.
Yeah!
And I think
that is a nice surprise.
I think you're going to like this.
However, it's negative.
I think you're going to like this piece of mail. It's from a Courtney last name withheld. that's actually her last
what
name.
Ethnicity
last
is
name
that?
Will.
Yeah.
Is it a her? It could be a dude.
Well, it probably was last name Vischel, and when she came to Ellis Island, her family came to Ellis Island, they changed it to last name.
Americanized it.
Ah, yeah.
But the subject line is
American idolized.
I think I am in love with you.
Oh, nice. Written to Elliot, I'm sure.
I don't think so. I think it might be to you.
Actually, I know I am. You guys seriously rock. I realized the other week that I must have somehow subscribed to your podcast at the beginning of your reign.
By mistake.
And I feel a better person for it. Thanks for making random hours of my weeks better. I only wish there were more podcasts to listen to. I've had to resort to listening to your podcast multiple times. Plus, I have fallen hopelessly in love with Stuart Wellington. So please pass the word on to him that there's some girl on the West Coast in love with him. Courtney.
Oh, my God. Well, I don't know how to respond to this.
How do you respond to it? You quit your job. You go to the West Coast.
Okay, West
you
Coast.
You cut all ties.
You knock on everyone's door.
You knock on everyone's door in California, Oregon, or Washington State.
Courtney.
Or possibly Western Canada.
In sort of a romantic comedy version of The Terminator.
Yep. Well, I got. Well, I'll start out with a nice bouquet of flowers, which will slowly be wilting.
My hair will get looser.
Yeah, my hair will get messier.
Well, I just wanted to open this up for discussion and to and ask
on a little thing called Flophouse Conversation Corner.
to put it out there, what do we think it is that has made this girl specifically fall in love with Stuart?
Like what? Well, he's got a beautiful voice.
He does have a low voice.
Barry White-esque.
Also, sure. I think he's unafraid to put his horniness on display.
There's a raw sensuality
That's
there,
nice,
yes.
Yeah.
And
the same way that women are attracted to the wolf from Tex Avery's Droopy cartoons.
I'm going to take your word for that.
Snob.
I'll take your word for that one. But it's like he's invading her brain through her ear holes.
Yeah. Wow, that's... Horrible! It's horrible.
It's like a weird like hot like Mr. Hyde like magnetism. I think like
you're like Shannon Tweed in one of those movies where she's a radio sex therapist. Only you're like the male version.
Well,
of that.
Angela Davies in the hit TV show Best Sex Ever, where she is also
sure.
I like the Shannon Tweed reference a little better.
Oh,
dude.
Okay.
Yeah, it's classic. It's classic.
classic softcore porn.
Your actress doesn't have the oeuvre that Shannon Tweed has.
Yeah, or Joan Severance.
Nice.
You know, the Black Scorpion?
Yeah.
Sure.
I think that's a pretty exciting email, though. Do you have any words?
Hey, thanks. I don't know much else.
He's a charmer.
Yeah. Well done,
Strong,
me.
Strong, silent type.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not drunk enough right now.
Yeah. Well, that listener mail segment went out with a whimper.
What? Yeah, a little bit, but like a puppy love whimper.
Yeah, I thought it was sweet.
Yeah, I thought it was very
nice. Should I have been shouting more?
No.
It had a nice quiet ending, like Spider-Man 3.
Hmm. So...
That's a technically accurate reference.
I want to talk about movies to recommend because I've been thinking about it since the last time I didn't have anything to talk about.
Spin your magic. Come on.
So,
come on.
Okay.
Drop some syrup on us.
Hey, Flophouse viewers. This is the time in the podcast when we kind of, you know, we go away from Shitty Town or wherever we were, and we go and talk about movies that we actually like. And right now I want to talk about a little movie that I watched recently called Nightmare Man. That is directed by the guy who directed a movie I really liked, a guy named Rolf Kineski or something.
Roald Dahl, yes.
Yes, Roald Dahl. And he directed another horror movie called The Hazing that was really good with Brad Dourif, you know, the guy who does the voice of Chucky. Mm-hmm. And this movie, Nightmare Man, was one of the After Dark
horror
film festivals.
Fest.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
I didn't see any of those. Was it?
Well... They're usually not very good, and this one I think is shot video to video, which is always a bad sign. Yeah. And some of the acting's not very good. However, there's a totally weird twist about two-thirds of the way through the movie. I think there's some nudity, and it's got an actress.
So check it off. Check it off your checklist as you're going along.
This is
sure
the raw sensuality we were talking about earlier.
And there's a crossbow and a demon, and yeah, it's totally worth watching.
I love that these are the elements you picked up on.
Oh, shit, my phone's ringing. It must be the Nightmare Man.
One of the elements
well, perhaps
was
it's
crossbow.
It might be one of Stewart's many paramours.
Yeah, or admirers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm
was
back.
It her? What did she say?
She said that she doesn't like me anymore.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Courtney, last name withheld.
I know.
You're so fickle.
Fickle is woman.
Yep. Took away her support. So, Nightmare Man, it's pretty good if you like horror movies like me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually haven't seen a lot of movies. And a lot of the movies I did see recently, like there was something wrong with them, or like, well, they weren't like,
ouch.
You said that, like, they turned out to be television shows, or one was actually a dog. Well, you know, that's...
one of them actually shot jelly instead of water, and one had square wheels. It's a weird, misfit toys joke. Anyway. Well, no, like Angel Heart. I saw Angel Heart, and like for 2/3 of the movie, I'm like, this is great. And then.
Angel Heart curse, I call it.
And then at the end, a fat man comes in and explains all of the crazy twist in a long exposition scene that doesn't make any sense. And then he gets killed by boiling in a pot of gumbo. And that's when the movie fell apart for me. But,
oh, yeah.
But I'm 2/3 of the way through Escape from Alcatraz, directed by Don Siegel, an excellent pulp film director who, you know, did the first Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Dirty Harry. You know, I can't speak to the whole film as I'm 2/3 of the way through it, but I'm really enjoying it. And I got it because I went to Alcatraz when I was in San Francisco, and it's really interesting to actually see a movie where, because Alcatraz was shut down and then turned into a national park, like, everything looks exactly the same in the movie as it did when I visited it, rather than, you know, usually if you see a location in person, it's changed so much since that movie was made.
Hey, isn't Alcatraz called The Rock?
It is called The Rock. You may be familiar with it from the film The Rock.
Yeah, I saw that movie.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage is pretty good in that one.
Ladies love it.
This segment is falling apart before your very ears.
I've seen some things recently I thought were okay. Recently, trying to think back if there are any movies I saw recently that I really liked a lot. Saw Torn Curtain, which I hadn't seen before. That's okay. So I'll recommend a movie that I didn't watch recently, but I just recommended to somebody else and they enjoyed it, which is Cat Ballou, starring Jane Fonda and Lee Marvin, which is a Western comedy that is narrated through song by Stubby K and Nat King Cole. And it is just, it's like a huge amount of fun. It's the movie that Lee Marvin won Best Supporting Actor for. He plays a dual role of a drunken gunfighter and an evil gunfighter with a metal nose. And it's all about this girl whose father is a rancher who gets killed, and she becomes an outlaw to revenge him. But it's very funny, but there are also some touching scenes, and like touching, like heartwarming, not touching like some
like
weird...
Robert Forster.
Yeah,
like, yeah, yeah, the third reference.
Oh no, it's just a lot of fun. And it's a very good movie in the way that it's like it's a good Western in the way they don't make them anymore, a good comedy in the way they don't make them anymore, and a good fun movie in the way they don't make them anymore, and a good Western comedy in the way that is rarely ever done well. So,
yeah, Cat Ballou.
Yeah, even Mr. Wellington likes it.
I saw it. I think I watched it originally because I thought there might be nudity in it. I was like 13.
This movie's from like 1966.
Well, I don't know. It was on a VHS tape.
The word cat was in the title, which suggested a certain...
I was disappointed.
Yeah. But it's also nice to see Jane Fonda when she still had a certain innocence about her before she became this kind of weird, half-political, half-crazy woman.
Half dragon.
All dragon.
All dragon. Nice.
That was the original tagline for Dragon Wars. Half political, half crazy, all dragon.
It wasn't, you're never home alone when you're a twin.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is going to be our shortest Flophouse yet. So if you have anything you want to say before we go about Stuart's love life, or Stuart wants to say anything about twin sitters, this is the time.
Yeah, I really want to see the movie Twin Sitters, so if you have a VHS copy of the Barbarian Brothers action comedy, you should mail it to 1345 Fake Street in Anytown, USA, Brooklyn, New York. Wait.
Anytown, USA in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, I live in a theme park. Is that okay?
It's a neighborhood.
Yeah, that's fine. I can't say anything against it.
It's a neighborhood in the borough of Brooklyn.
It makes it sound like you go home and go, like, time to go to work, and you put on a sash that says mayor and a top hat and carry around a pair of giant scissors.
Yeah. Another fucking ribbon cutting. Christ.
Why are they opening so many new businesses in any town? There's so much urban revitalization in this part of the city.
Oh, God damn it, another fucking cookie factory. Why?
The two big industries there are ribbons and scissors.
Yep. Another novelty scissor creation factory.
If I could introduce, I don't know if this goes against anything to put this on the floor, but I think the listener letter segment was such a hit that if any listeners at home have any questions or interesting ideas to put forward to the Flophouse crew that you'd like to see addressed in a future episode, let us know.
Yeah.
Or if you rent Dragon Wars and want to share your thoughts on it, I mean, do it in written form.
I think all those things are
Or start up your own rival podcast.
No, don't do that.
Call it the Mop House.
Yep.
Today we use Swiffers. What do you guys think about them?
Wait,
picked up a lot of dust.
It's not really a rival podcast.
Also,
seems like an entirely different
niche. Movie called Dragon Wars.
While we were sweeping. Let's keep on topic here. Sweeping.
We attached Dragon Wars to the end of our mop. Didn't seem to do very well in our cleaning tests.
Ruined a lot of discs.
Yeah.
It did really well in our having dragons in it tests, though.
That's good. Yeah, that's funny.
Speaking of which, if you want to get in touch with us, like Courtney, last name withheld, you can write us at theflophousepodcast@gmail.com. And also, if you go to theflophousepodcast.blogspot.com, you can get a link to Now We Are on Facebook. Or if you're just on Facebook and you search for groups, the Flophouse group, you can join the Flophouse group and you can do discussions there very easily and do all your Web 2.0 interacting like kids do.
It's your one-stop flop shop. Stop shop.
What?
Yeah, that'd
one-stop flop stop house.
The Mop House, everyone.
Next week we're talking about Swiffers.
Classic yarn mops versus polyester mops. Which picks up better?
Well, anyway, on that note of complete gibberish,
we have a letter here at the Mop House. I have a hardwood flooring in my apartment, and
I have a problem with cat hair.
An older listener.
For the last time, the Mop House is not a podcast for people who want to make a house out of mops. That's Building a House Out of a Mops podcast.
Oh, that's good. So, yeah. Dragon Wars was a movie we watched. Wait, you should do the sign off.
I'll do it as if I were you.
Okay.
Peace out, dudes.
Nice. We're also supposed to say our names though, right?
Right.
Okay, but that's pretty good.
The one with the low, sultry voice is Stuart Wellington.
The guy who's talking right now was Dan McCoy.
And I'm Chris McCool.
Good night.
Yeah. Oh, man, this podcast was the silliest I think we've had in a while.
Well, we did watch a movie called Dragon Wars. Let's talk about it until we get bored, which is right now.
Actually, we should keep it shorter than you because I have a surprise for you guys.
A surprise?
Fuck off.
I hope each of us gets a key and we have to find out what it goes to.
Yep. I hope that we each get part of a sandwich and we have to decide how to make that sandwich using teamwork.
But it's one piece of bread, another piece of bread, and a piece of cheese.
That would be pretty easy,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, it's not a great challenge.
All right, that's true.